Hello, it's only Sylv. Just a quick heads up before we get into it. We've recorded all these conversations remotely during lockdown, so there might be a few little glitches in the sound here and there. Anyway, I'll shut up now and let you crack on with listening to our chat. Hope you enjoy it, gang.
Welcome to the BIY Podcast, a podcast focused on demystifying the world of work in the music industry by sharing career stories from those who know. I'm Anne Frankenstein. I'm a DJ and broadcaster.
And I'm Sylvia Gargiulo, the founder of BIY People and Talent. We're bringing you honest, meaningful, compassionate human conversations with people, for people, through the lens of working in the music business and beyond.
We're delighted to have Gilbert Johnson, artist manager and marketing consultant, join us on the podcast today. Sylv, tell us why you opened up your little black book and invited Gilbert in for a chat. And how do you two know each other?
As you know, I wanted to talk to brilliant people I've met over the years to share their career stories and find out how they got to where they are today, delivering insight, advice and a sprinkling of inspiration for our listeners, whether they're just starting out or already on their career path within the music business. So I met Gilbert back in 2012. I was working at Universal Music as the talent acquisition manager, which is a posh phrase for recruitment. So anyone who's listening who's not sure what talent acquisition is, there you go. And he was looking to kickstart his career within a major label. So I remember being blown away by his proactivity and commitment. Even back then, he'd done so much in his own time. It was just a total no-brainer that he'd go on and do amazing things. So since then, Gilbert's worked at Virgin EMI, Google, YouTube, and now he runs his own business. And he focuses on providing creative marketing strategy for independent and signed artists. I'm genuinely so delighted and grateful that he's agreed to have a chat with us today. Welcome to the BIY Pod, Gilbert.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Great to have you with us, Gilbert. Are you ready for these quickfire questions, just so we can get to know you a little bit better?
I'm going to have to say yes.
Correct answer. Okay, what's the first album you bought?
First album I bought, bearing in mind, this is not quickfire, but bearing in mind I grew up in the LimeWire Napster generation. It was a long time before I actually bought an album, but I remember having this cassette of Bill Withers' Greatest Hits, which I'm going to say I bought. But I don't know if I bought it.
That's a very credible choice. I'm skeptical, but I'll take it. Okay, I mean, it's funny you talk about Napster because, like, in the future, kids will probably be talking about what was the first live stream gig you attended.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But what was the first physical gig that you went to?
This is a hard one because I've been asked this one before. I never remember because I went to loads growing up.
Is it that you don't remember, or like me, do you pretend it's a slightly more credible band than the band it actually was? Mine, I tell people. It was Ocean Colour Scene, but it was actually E17, so revealed my secrets.
Listen, no one's knocking E17 these days.
They've stood the test of time. I mean, people still talk about them.
I want to say, first ever show I bought a ticket for myself was a John Legend show when I was like 14 or something.
Well, that's cool. More so. We'll move on. What have you got on repeat at the moment?
Stevie Wonder, Talking Book, is one of my favourite albums, and I literally just dip in and out and listen to that all the time.
Gorgeous record. That's one of those albums I think a lot of people, and one of those artists I think a lot of people are probably going back to after quite a difficult, traumatic year.
Yeah.
Stevie Wonder always gives you a bit of hope. Well, if those last questions didn't feel like quickfire questions, this one certainly was. Who's the artist that changed your life?
It has to be Bill Withers. So that's why I'm trying to not rinse and repeat, but literally it has to be Bill Withers. My mum always tells people the story of like when I was young and I was in the car fast asleep because I always just fall asleep in the car anyway, still to this day, 31 years old. But Bill Withers came on the radio. Apparently I just sat bolt upright and it was Lean On Me. And I just started singing Lean On Me. And I was a kid at the time. So she loves telling that story.
Stunning track. So what would your dream lineup be then? Artists past or present? Would Bill Withers feature in that supergroup?
Yeah, 100%. It's a big supergroup. Bill Withers, Sam Cooke, Donny Hathaway, Nina Simone, Ella Fitzgerald, Marvin Gaye, and who have I missed? Yeah, no, that's a pretty good supergroup.
The greatest choir of all time.
You're looking incredible. Amazing. Well, look, Before we get stuck into your career story, Gilbert, when you very kindly agreed to be on the show, I sent you a list of words to pick.
I was coerced.
You were coerced, yeah, yeah.
You made that clear.
Yes, your peas in the pod, if you will. And the words that you picked were proactivity, passion and patience. What was it about those words, apart from being coerced by my good self, that made you pick them? What was it that stood out for you?
They really speak to me and just everything I've been doing for the last however many years, decade or so. The second one you mentioned, passion, is the number one thing. And I remember actually you talking to me about it many years ago, but that's the number one word I listen out for when I'm interviewing anybody or, you know, talking to anybody to give them advice on how to get into the music industry. There's been loads of young people over the years, and if they don't say the word passion or passionate, I don't believe them. You know, that's the first sign that somebody wants to really work hard, grit, determination to get into music or just to be successful in music, because the passion drives you. The passion drives you when it's hard. The passion drives you when you're maybe earning very little money at the beginning, which, you know, sometimes you're even lucky to be earning money. So I think that passion for me is the number one thing.
I was just going to say, actually, it's so important, isn't it? And it's the bit that takes you from going beyond just a consumer or like a fan of music, because let's face it, most people are a fan of music, but it's the bit, and I always say to people, like, everyone's passionate about music, but, you know, how do you prove that passion? What is it you do beyond listening to music that really shows a potential employer actually that it's a career choice for you versus just something that you quite like?
Also, to add to that, is that actually there are some people who aren't as passionate as they think they are about music. They like the idea. They think that there's a lifestyle. They think that there's glitz and glamour. But I assure you, sometimes I wonder where the glitz and glamour is in my job. You know, when an artist is calling you up at God knows what time on a Sunday and asking you the most, like, ridiculous question, what's going on here, you know? Yeah. So the passion is what drives you to think that it's not a job. You know, you're lucky to be doing this crazy, wonderful thing of working in the music industry. And, you know, when it's not good, the passion will drive you, but you're hoping that most of the time it is good. So yeah, that's passion. And then patience. I always thought, you know, growing up, I was definitely in school, I thought I was an impatient person because you always want to do the next thing. You want to, you know, whether it's GCSEs, you're like, I want to be doing my A-levels. Oh, I want to be at uni. I want to be finishing school, like finishing uni and getting a job, you know. You're always waiting for that next thing or hoping for the next thing. So I thought growing up, I was really impatient. But actually, having now, you know, looked after artists or, you know, even just like with campaigns and being a marketing person, sometimes you just have to wait. You just have to wait for the artist to make the music or for the fan base to grow or whatever it is. And I definitely am, like, you know, in the teams that I work in, I'm definitely the one who's advocating patience the most. And I think I definitely have like large reserves of patience that I never thought I did.
Yeah, it's such an underrated, you know, I talk about qualities and behaviours a lot with people, you know, whatever stage of their career they're in, because I think sometimes people then further down their career they just lean on the experience, and it's like, it's about the qualities, the behaviours, the attitude, the attributes that you have as well. And patience is one of those that is so underrated and it's so rarely picked out and, you know, highlighted, I guess, and it is just so absolutely key to building a career and, you know, knowing it's going to take a while and it doesn't all just happen sort of overnight, which I think we kind of live in a world now sometimes where people aren't used to waiting for stuff. Yeah, I'm really pleased that you picked patience.
And then being proactive as well. Like, people think at the beginning of your career, you know, when you're like entry-level jobs or an assistant or whatever it is, or your job is to assist other people, that you have to be the one being proactive, and people who are, you know, maybe a bit more senior or CEOs or the heads of the company, they're the ones who wait for you to be proactive, right? But I disagree. I think that everybody should be proactive in every way. And I've definitely found, as being an artist manager, is that if you're not proactive, then you're not showing your value to your artist. But also, as a consultant, as a freelancer, if you're not proactive, then it literally hurts your pocket. You know, you can't just wait and expect that project or that artist or that whatever it is to just fall in your lap. You have to be out there. You have to be making sure people are aware of what you're doing. You have to be doing things that show that there's value to your service or to even having you around. I think being proactive is hugely, hugely important in everything that we do.
I agree. And you know what? I mentioned the word proactive to describe you in the intro there because it really was so obvious to me from the first moment that I met you that you were such an incredibly proactive person. You weren't waiting around for someone to give you an opportunity. I remember it took us a little while until we got there, didn't it? And I guess that's actually a really good place to kick off the interview reel, I suppose.
I've got some even more difficult questions for you now than the quickfire ones. But let's start at the beginning. Well, first of all, when you sort of realised that the music business existed as something that you could be a part of, and when did you realise that you wanted to work there? When did you realise that you could?
This is a great question because I didn't even know what the music industry was. You know, you obviously know about artists, but they're just the people who are singing on Top of the Pops, right? You know, I'd heard of the record producer. I watched, you know, Ray 1,000 times and heard about record producers and labels. And so it was kind of like starting to piece things together. But it was really when I was going into uni, I was going in to do this course, English and Comparative Literature, because I love doing English. I love reading books and analysing them, etc. But I knew that that's not what the end goal was. I didn't want to have a career in that. So I was going to take those 3 years to just carry on learning. Just before I was going into my first year, I was like, I need to start thinking about my career. I started rationalizing, you know, what is it that I love doing? Well, I'd set up choirs and led choirs and play piano. And I knew that I didn't want to be the person on the stage. I wanted to be the person behind the person on the stage and the person helping that person on the stage. That's how I was kind of like figuring out, because I didn't have the terminology, the language to even work out what these careers could have been. That's when I was launched a mission to find out what the music industry was and just to try and get myself as much experience as possible. And yeah, like the end of my first year, you know, just having conversations with everybody and just telling them this is what I was thinking about doing. I don't know how to do it. One conversation led to another, which led to another. And I found myself doing an internship at Sony ATV the summer before my second year, doing admin royalties. And yeah, that was my first bit of experience in the music industry.
So obviously you got the internship at Sony, not just in terms of getting that specific internship, but also you had to kind of put feelers out there and be open to the idea of taking a sort of entry level opportunity. Yeah. How did you sort of go about cultivating that attitude and sort of seeking out that internship that you eventually got?
So it was really just about having conversations with people to improve my knowledge of what that could be. And some people didn't know anything about the industry, that was fine. But what they did was they would pass me on to people. They'll, you know, there'll be somebody who they knew, who knew something about something. And that's when I started sponging off everybody else, you know. And again, going back to the word of being proactive in trying to like even explain what it was, but being proactive in finding out more about what the industry entailed and where I could fit in that. For me, I didn't know that I wanted to work at a label. I didn't know where I was going to land. But it was just really a case of being open to try everything, anything and everything.
That was a P. That would be the extra P on the list. Or, well, maybe a better word for it. Maybe a better word is resourcefulness. You know, looking around and seeing what little sort of glimpses of opportunities might be there to have a conversation that might lead on to the next thing and lead on to the next thing. I think that's so important.
Yeah, and just before you jump in, sorry, Sylv, is that actually it's hard at the beginning. And I'm not even going to pretend that those conversations just, you know, led to something straight away. It was literally putting the feelers out there, putting something out into the universe. And then maybe 6 months, a year down the line, that's when something was actually picked up. You know, I'll probably go into this a bit more in a bit, but like, that's the same thing that happened with Sylv, is that I was introduced to her. I think I can never remember the exact timeline, but it was like December 2012 or something. But I didn't get my first interview for a real role until the spring of 2013, you know, so a few months later. And for me, it wasn't like, if you think that first initial conversation is going to lead to everything and you're suddenly going to be working at your dream job, then that's just the wrong way to think about it.
it's about another P word, perseverance, to know that it starts with baby steps. You know, the timing is everything. So put the feelers out early and just be open to just something happening or not happening, but just be open and be patient and wait.
What's really important as well, you, I remember, Gilbert, is it wasn't like we had that first chat and then you did nothing until I called you with a job. We had that first chat and you were continually doing stuff in your own time, your own projects. It wasn't stuff you were necessarily being paid for. It wasn't formal. It was stuff that you were creating, the proactivity word back again. But that's the key part. I think sometimes people do forget that recruiter that they're talking to or that person in talent acquisition, they can't alone make your dreams come true, give you your dream job. Like, you've got to keep moving in the right direction. And that first conversation, you know, your CV looked different 2 months down the line and 3 months down the line. So, you know, credit to you for personally.
No, I appreciate that. And I think what you were saying to me, but also just because I knew that I wasn't ready yet either, is that I had to just fill my CV with stuff that was relevant, that looked good. Yes, I ended up in doing a marketing internship, but it wasn't geared towards marketing. It was just, you're trying to get more knowledge about the industry that you want to work in. You're trying to do things that show you can go out and do what, you know, I tour manage a friend's band and it's probably not going to be in my obituary tour managing this band. But like, it was really important for me at that point to open the door, and just so that every time I used to call Silver, I remember calling from my parents' landline. Hi, I've added another thing to my CV. I'm going to send it to you and let me know what you think about it. And actually getting something back, you know, from a very busy person. It showed that I was on the right track and I was just going to carry on doing that just to get as much experience.
I mean, speaking about, you know, another sort of key part of what you're talking about, which I'm sure we'll touch on, you mentioned getting an email back from a very busy person. The other thing to mention is that, like, maybe even 99 times out of 100, you won't get a reply back from anyone. Yeah. And it's so easy to forget about that once you've reached the place where you want to be. It's so important to build up resilience. You know, to people ignoring you or not acknowledging you, or not out of any callousness, but just because people are so busy. I always feel like it's really important to sort of ignore the rejections or take what you can from them. And then just like, even now, anytime I get like a positive email from someone or an opportunity, my response is like completely, you know, way out of balance to what it actually is. Like, I'm so happy to get good emails and I just ignore the bad ones. I think that's a good skill to learn as well.
I know, but I think this point as well is like, I talk to people trying to get into the music industry all the time on this as well, and I've got a few mentees who are trying to tell this too, is that just because somebody hasn't replied to your email does not mean that it should affect anything that you're doing and trying to do. You don't know what that person was doing at that moment or in the weeks around it where they didn't reply. It's your job to give them the best reason to respond possible. Mm-hmm. And that's what it's all about. It's for you to try and persuade them through the language that you use or through, you know, just even how you phrase the offer. It's not, so if somebody reached out to me and I don't know them and they said, hey, let's go for a coffee, I'm kind of like, why? I'm kind of, you know, if I know a bit more about what you're going to do for me, and it sounds completely selfish, but that's just persuasion, right? Hey, I'm going to help you in some way. You don't know it yet, but let's grab 15 minutes. For me, I'm much more inclined as a person on the receiving end of that to respond. And I honestly think people trying to get into the music industry always reach out. Don't take somebody not replying as a personal affront to you, but also if they don't reply, chase it up. You know, there's nothing wrong with you sending two emails or the third email not saying the exact same thing in the first or the second one, but actually being like, do you know what, you probably didn't get this or you're very busy, but here's a thing that I would love to talk to you about which I think could be of benefit to you. It'll be great for us to sit down.
Exactly. It comes back to exactly what you said, catches your attention, that passion. So important. Yeah. So talk to me about where you are now then and how you got there. Give me a little chronological journey of how you got to be where you are now.
Okay. It started, like I said, with that Sony ATV internship in publishing. And then I did some work at a PR company. I also, you know, tour managed that band, like I said. And this all kind of happened in the space of during uni and the first year after I left. And then what else did I do? So music PR, and oh god, it's so hard to even remember all of these things. And I worked in a venue as well. And then that was all CV building to try and get, like, you know, the quote unquote proper job. And then that's when I started at Virgin doing marketing as their intern after the label was created when Mercury was merged with old EMI Virgin. And I was there for 5 years, finished the internship after a year and was promoted and was able to be kept on as a marketing assistant, where I picked up a few projects, and those projects, you know, I was had a little bit of a success with those. So I was promoted again quite quickly, probably about a year and a bit later, to product manager. And at that point, I was, you know, doing my own campaigns and not assisting anymore. And then 4.5, 5 years at Virgin, I thought I would go to another label or stay at Virgin and carry on. But I just felt like I needed to keep growing. And so that's when I went to Google and I had this opportunity to do to work with talent, well, on a different product completely, which was phones and voice activated speakers and stuff like that. And I was there for just under a year in that team. And at Google, they encourage you to move around a lot, but I wanted to try out. They just recently launched YouTube Music, and I was kind of really keen to try out doing some marketing on a streaming service. That's when I went over to that team and did brand partnerships from a marketing point of view, and was there for another 6-7 months. And the reason why I left then was because I'd got so much experience, time, knowledge, skills, and it was ready to make the leap and set up my own company. That's when I set up Final Draft, which is my marketing consultancy. We also manage producers and artists as well under Final Draft. Oh, and I forgot to say, I also set up a label called Hear This Records whilst I was at Virgin. So I was doing that kind of moonlighting and doing that evenings and weekends and whilst I was at Virgin. And then whilst I was at Google, then I started managing two of the artists that we looked after. And so, yeah, just been busy, busy, busy ever since. And now I'm a fully self-employed person who does a bit of everything. I, you know, whether it's artist management, producer management, releasing music through the label, or the marketing consultancy side of things. You know, my reason for being is to promote and to break artists, and those are the hats that I wear now.
I've got to highlight it, and I know that a lot of the guests that we're speaking to, I will say the same thing, but the work ethic is incredible. When you were telling us then, it was like, oh yeah, I forgot about this. Like, it's so impressive. And again, it was always a no-brainer from my side from the moment I met you that you were going to succeed, because you had this amazing work ethic. And I think you should just be very, very proud of yourself.
No, I know. It's just only really things like this where you kind of do think about what you actually do. But no, I think, do you know what? It's really interesting because I do agree with you. The work ethic is a must. It really is. And you have to be able to operate at such a high level. What I have learned as well, and it's definitely not a but, it's an and, you definitely need to take some time for yourself as well. 100%. You know, and it's actually not that cool and sexy to always be working. It's really cool and sexy if you're able to work at a high level, but also have some downtime. I've definitely learned that. And I think when you're starting out, you have much more energy. You're probably a bit younger. So you have energy to go out. I remember at Virgin, we used to go out to like 4 or 5 gigs a week and constantly be out and just like working till late. And
another thing I was going to say is I remember seeing you at a gig, like, and I guess in my mind, it was always like, oh yeah, the people that work at certain record labels, they've got gigs all the time with the artists that they work on. And I remember being, I think it was Village Underground maybe, and Leon Bridges was playing, and he was not one of your artists. He wasn't even signed to any of the Universal labels. And I'm at this Leon Bridges gig and I look over and there's Gilbert and I'm like, shit, he really does love music, because you could have been at 10 other shows, you know what I mean?
Yeah. It's true. I will continue doing that. But I agree with you. I think it's so important that everybody, you can't just coast. Like I said before, this industry may feel like glitz and glamour, but it's actually most of the time not.
And you're so right to bring up the taking time for yourself. It is a real balancing act. You know, you've got to work hard to get to where you need to be, but it's so essential that people are taking care of, you know, their physical and their mental health as well, because that's all we've got at the end of the day. So, you know, burnout is real, and it's so important. build time in for yourself and not feel guilty about it either.
Out of all of the things that you've just given us a very quick run through of, pick out one thing that you're the most proud of.
Oh, wow. I guess everything I did up until this point, as we spoke about getting into it in the first place. But when I did get into the music industry properly and started working at Virgin, I knew that artist management was the thing that I ultimately wanted to do. And that's kind of, remember I was saying about rationalising, like after school and before uni, rationalising, I wanted to be the person behind that person on the stage. Well, I had never heard about an artist manager, but I think the thing that was drawing me to that was that you have so much to do with the artist's development and breaking them and trying to get them from nothing to something. So for me, getting to the point where I was running my own company, doing what I knew that I was going into the music industry to do in the first place, that was a real moment for me. And it wasn't setting up a company, because setting up a company is really boring, actually. It's like, it's the decision, the eureka moment that it was actually finally time. And that happened when I was in Kenya a year and a half ago, sat on this island called Lamu in a hammock, watching the sea, and there was like lovely white sand. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to do it. It's time. I'm going to set up my own company. And also, obviously, I had set up a company, but I was doing that with somebody else as a side hustle. But knowing that it was time to make that into a main hustle, that was the biggest moment for me. It really was. And I'm so happy. I've not looked back since I made that decision. I really haven't. And, you know, I was working at Google. I was working at a place that could have set me up forever. But it still wasn't enough for me, because I wanted to do this thing. And this thing, I think, you know, hopefully we'll be having a conversation in 10 years' time, or we're listening back to this, and I'll have got those artists that have got from nothing to something.
Do you know, I love the fact that you made your decision to do it yourself from a hammock in Kenya. I made mine walking around Spitalfields, bawling my eyes out because I hated my job so much at the time. So yours is far more glamorous than mine. Mine was just like, I can't do it anymore. And my boyfriend at the time said to me, just sack it off, mate, and start your own thing. You wanted to do that anyway. But it's funny how those moments come to different people in different ways. Anne, I know you had packed in the full-time job at one point and decided to move forward on your own project. It's interesting hearing how everyone sort of, that moment comes to everyone differently at different times for different reasons.
Absolutely. I think the commonality is that there comes a point where you realise that you have grafted and collected all of the resources that you need in order to do that, which is obviously, Gilbert, what you did. You know, the breadth of experience that you gathered up until you got to the point where you wanted to set up your own business or decided that it was the right time, you know, that presumably has all served you. You know, I'm sure it's been a priceless asset to have over the course of, you know, having your own business.
Definitely. And for me, it was all about trying different things to add to my skill set. And, you know, I never knew that I was going to be working with influencers at Google, a big, massive tech company. I never knew I was going to do that. But I was open to trying everything out. And I thought to myself, that's going to be invaluable for artists that I work with, because most managers haven't got that experience, you know. Mm. And when they have to make a decision between three or four managers, and I'm the person who's worked with, you know, I've worked outside of the music industry, brands, working with talent from other creative industries, I've worked at a label, they're going to be like, oh, that could be the difference between selling 10,000 records and selling 1 million records, you know. And I think, I'm hoping that everything that I've done is going to continue making me valuable to an asset to my artists, because by no means finished myself. I'm still learning, I'm still going forward, I'm still trying to find new things. And so, yeah, I think that's, you're right, it's so important. Like, lean back on your skills, but you grow.
Exactly. Obviously, Sylv took some time a moment ago to compliment your work ethic. And you mentioned it's not often that you actually have an opportunity to sit back and think of all the things that you've done and take a moment to be proud. I think what's far more common, especially when you have your own business, but, you know, just with any job that you're passionate about, you spend more time focused on the challenges that you face day to day, big or small. So let's dive into that. Can you name like the biggest challenge that you've faced so far over the course of your career?
It's definitely when I first started at Google. Not when I first started, it was probably about 6 to 9 months in. And you got through the honeymoon period of like being at this new job. And my team was great and everything. But getting into the work, drilling down into the work, and things changed really rapidly at Google. Strategy shifted. And not only was I struggling with the work, not the workload, but just was the work right for me? Here I was trying to like do as much as possible in busy periods to stay ahead of the curve. And I'm not going to pretend that it was always easy there, but also that sense of imposter syndrome. It's like, I was like, I'm just a music guy. I'm not in this big tech corporation. I'm not one of you lot. But really helped with that was connecting with other people. Because when you feel that sense of imposter syndrome, when there are challenges, sometimes you go into yourself. You know, I was trying to work more hours. You know, I was trying to understand things because everything's like, it wasn't hard. It wasn't difficult. But for me, it was very much a case of I'm trying to do what I've always done in my career, which is do more, try and experience more, try to get more skills. Basically, it didn't work for a minute. And that's where, for me, I was like, I need to connect with other people to now really understand like the ways of working. My ways of working, are they right? And what I realized was it wasn't that I couldn't do certain things in the job. It was my perception that everybody could do the couple of things that I was not good at much better than I could. And so I wasn't good enough. And so connecting with other people, I found like it was really boring stuff. It's things like at Google, we work with decks and presentations, and literally every meeting you have to have a presentation. And sometimes they're only 10 slides long, but I've literally seen some decks which are like hundreds of slides long. And I just thought everybody in the company was just a whiz at making decks. And what I realized when I was talking to other people was that there's just things that people do. Like sometimes, you know, it doesn't have to be all bells and whistles. Sometimes it's really as simple as you've copied and pasted the structure of another deck and you've just updated it. And I was just like, what? You just copied another deck? Is it as simple as that? Well, yeah, it is. And actually, if I hadn't had those conversations with other people and connected with other people and just done one-on-ones with people to be like, by the way, I'm not great at this. Can you help me with this? I wouldn't have got better. And it really helped because there was definitely a change, you know? And I was just asking people, can you just send me your old decks and I'll just steal those as templates? And that's only one small example, but it was, you know, that period for me, it was like post the honeymoon period where you're not new anymore. And so you can't get away with like all the newbie questions and stuff. And so you actually like lose all the connections around you and you just have to double down and talk to people and connect with people. And
more people than we know about, you know, have those feelings on a daily basis. And I think as well, you know, what you're talking about is having a team around you and having a network and being able to lean on people. And one of the things I always say is we're at BIY, certainly, we're all about collaboration, not competition. And I feel like any successful company, business, group of people, it's made up by people with the different kind of skill set and different approach and, you know, different backgrounds, so that actually the sum of those parts is stronger than each individual. You know, I think that's 100%. Really, really important.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, if your job is, you know, you're quite an individual role, like let's say you're a radio plug or whatever, those just because you don't have other people working for you or with you in your direct company doesn't mean you're alone. Like, you know, you're working on campaigns and projects. The rest of the team are there to bounce ideas off as well, you know? And I think it's so important. My number one thing, both for Hear This and Final Draft with the people I work with, is collaboration. I love great ideas and they come from everybody, you know? And it doesn't matter who comes up with the great ideas as long as they're for the common good, you know, whether that's, you know, furthering an artist's career or whatever. But I bang on about collaboration all the time.
Okay, so in your current working situation, obviously, you know, you started your own business. The theory is that you can make things exactly how you want them. But is there anything that you aren't doing at the moment that you wish you were? Or in a wider context, you know, anything that you used to do that you miss that you just don't have the capacity for anymore?
Oh, wow. That's a great question. I think I'm very clear on the things that I need to do to drive the impact I need. And for me, it takes a lot of patience. But what I do with all my artists is that we sit down and we make objectives, because what that helps to do is really like focus our efforts and focus on those things which will drive impact. Because in a world where, you know, you are self-employed or whatever it is, you can do anything. You can literally try and do anything, take on more, work with more artists. But that doesn't always help to pay the bills from a financial point of view. But just, you know, in the other sense of, you know, getting you to where you need to be. Is there anything that I used to do that I definitely sometimes miss having a much bigger team around me like I did at the label? I really, you know, miss walking over to somebody and, you know, somebody's desk or office and having that, you know, conversation, which may be, you know, personal conversation or a work conversation, but those water cooler moments. Obviously, right now, we've been locked down since March, most people aren't having that anyway. I definitely miss that sense of just having, you know, 60 people around you, and any of those people you can, you know, talk to at any time. But what I am good at is replacing that with, you know, I'm doing endless Zoom calls at the moment, just, you know, catching up with people, or, you know, where we can do socially distanced things in the park, going on dog walks and stuff like that. It's, you know, that helps to, you know, replicate that in some way. But from a work point of view, I'm really happy because I do set myself goals, but also more from a strategy side of things, just set myself objectives, and I don't go too hardcore. If you put a list of 10 things up on the board, yeah, great, but are you actually going to do all those things? And are all of those things necessary, especially when it's busy? So I try and, you know, look at what are the 3 main things I need to do today that's going to get me more than trying to do 25 things.
So obviously you've done well as, you know, controlling your own environment in that way, which I guess comes from running your own business. But what about the music industry in general? Is there anything that you would just love to change about the music industry itself?
Oh, that's a big question, because this is what I think about day in, day out, is how I'm going to disrupt the music industry. And I do, but without giving all my secrets away, I do think that there are a lot of things that are broken in the music industry that I think would be great for us to change. And I think everyone's talking about it, but just remuneration for songwriters, for artists. I think from streaming being such a big part of what we do now, and income generated for artists, like, it's opened up a whole world of opportunities for independence. And for me, it's like, you know, some of my artists will be signed to labels, but, you know, having my own label has really helped us be independent and not wait for a label to be the group of people to pump resources, time, money into breaking those artists. And I think I try and work in a very credible space in music. I'm still a pop mainstream guy ultimately, but I do like cultural artists, and that takes time. If you believe in your artists, if you believe in their product and their music and what they've got to offer, then you don't need to worry about what the hypey, buzzy thing that the majors are caring about at the moment. And I definitely think disruption is about power, and it's about that power being displaced, you know, these days. And I definitely think that there's always going to be a space for the majors and a space for big companies like that. But I think the distribution of wealth is different from what it was 50 years ago, and it will be even more different in 10 years' time. Yeah, like I said, I don't want to give all my secrets away about how I'm going to do that, but that's the ethos, and that's kind of like the culture that I promote.
Fantastic. So 2 really quick questions from me, because I'm mindful of time here, because we've had such a great in-depth chat. So 2 quick ones are, A, what do you wish you'd known when you started out? And B, what's the best advice you've ever been given?
Such a great question. That there's not one way to do this. And actually, every single person that you meet has their own unique take and spin on how they got to where they got to. And for me, I had to step out to come back in. I had to step out to really realize that this is the thing that I love doing more than anything else. You know, that wasn't a mistake. And I really back it that I had to step out to do something different to make me even more of an asset, you know, you know, setting up my marketing consultancy final draft, I couldn't have done that after leaving the major label setup, because those environments don't encourage you to think like that and to want to do that. So somewhere like Google, they really do help you and give you the skills and knowledge to want to be a startup or a freelancer. So yeah, I definitely think that at the beginning, like I said, I was open to anything, but I definitely thought that, you know, you had to go work your way up, become the head of a department, then hopefully try and be like, you know, MD and then the president of a company. And who knows where I'm going to end up? Who knows, like, what's going to happen? I'm really happy what I'm doing, what I'm doing, and I think I'm on the right track, but who knows?
And look, I guess as well, that's the other really important point to make for anyone listening who's like, oh my God, I don't know if I could run my own business, or, you know, not everyone has to do that. Like, there are jobs for people in different places. Some people like being in a big team and a big organisation. Some people like working at a small company. Some people are much like myself. I don't know if I'd put you in this. I don't want to insult you, Gilbert, but my category is I'm a management challenge. All of my bosses I've ever had in my career have told me that. So it was maybe natural that I was going to run my own thing. But yeah,
I'm definitely in that bracket, by the way.
There you go. Join my club, the management challenges. I love it. Okay, fantastic. Well, look, each episode we ask our amazing producer, Kiani, if there's anything he'd like to ask our guests, as he's in the early stages of his career. And as always, I would love to encourage people to ask questions, and I'm all about creating those opportunities, which I think we spoke about earlier. So I'm going to call this bit Kiani's Question Corner. So Kiani, over to you.
Thanks for that intro, Sylv. Yeah, so you did mention the three Ps, which was proactivity, passion and patience. Those three Ps actually did stand out to me because, I mean, they are three skills that I acquire as well to get to where I need to be. And I'm just literally sitting here listening to, you know, everything that you said. You're throwing out some music business gems. Yeah. So that references back to this question. Were there any expectations you had about your career path that you had found almost like different to reality in both a good and bad way?
It's going to be a terrible answer, but no, not really. The expectations were, well, I wasn't doing anything that anybody else I knew really was doing. I wasn't doing anything that, like, none of my friends really work in music. I know a couple of people, but really, it was just, there's no expectations. I didn't have expectations. I think at the time where you have rigid expectations, you're just setting yourself up for a fail, really. And I think for me, it's, like I said many times, it's being open. It's just having that openness to use whatever it is, whatever role it is, as a stepping stone to get you closer to where you may or may know where you want to be. When I first started, like everybody else does, I wanted to work in A&R because, you know, A&R is the thing that you don't ever hear about. And at the point where you hear about it, you're like, oh my God, that's me. And it was really having a conversation with an A&R who was the person who introduced me to Sylv. That person was like, well, he started in marketing. And that role in marketing was the thing that helped him realize that marketing wasn't for him. A&R was for him. Right. And similarly, I was like, I have to be an A&R team because I want to be signing artists. I want to be signing them. But actually, it wasn't the signing of it. It was the development of artists that really spoke to me. And yes, I could do that as an A&R manager who was making the record. But I wanted the holistic approach where I was getting involved with, yes, maybe the music, but also the promotion, you know, being across the digital and the social side of things. And that's when I landed on marketing. But if I hadn't been open to doing that first interview for this marketing internship and being like, no, no, I don't want marketing, I want to do A&R, then I would never have been able to get my foot in the door as quickly as I had. I think that's kind of really it. I think expectations, definitely at the beginning, it's not about what you expect from it. It's being open to whatever it throws at you.
Yeah, I understand that because I would say expectations always lead to disappointments as well, because then you actually like get into the row. It's like, oh, this ain't exactly how I thought it would be, you know?
Exactly.
So yeah, that's good. I got another question for you. And this obviously goes back before lockdown. At work, how did your average week look for you? Because I feel like getting a sense of someone's day-to-day schedule will like give you like the best idea of possible what it would look like if I was to be working there with someone else.
So just generally what my job entails is definitely campaign-based work. So it means that sometimes you're ridiculously busy and sometimes you're less busy. From a day-to-day point of view, pre-lockdown, meetings form the foundation of your work day. And actually, sometimes there are so many meetings that you don't actually get any real work done. So yeah, it was just a lot of like traveling from, you know, meeting the publisher, meeting live agents, being proactive for my artists or for my business, just going out to speak to people so that they knew what I was doing, that there were opportunities that I was seeking. A lot of what you do is communication based on email, on the phone or whatever. So that was a lot. I've been really clear to myself and, you know, the teams that I've worked with is that I've done the running from sprinting from campaign to campaign where you just have to go into autopilot and just tick stuff off your list because there's so much going on. I've done that and I don't want to do that. So I build in space and time. Like I put in blocks in my diary of no meetings because I want that to be time where I'm thinking and I'm being creative and I'm trying to do the things that meetings don't allow. But also like creative brainstorms, you know, things like that where you're getting the whole team together quick, like, or maybe other one-on-ones or quick like huddles. Those are so important because that's where like you get the magic, you know, those ideas that you bounce off each other. And I'm very clear to myself, I have to always be creative and I have to have the space for that. And then when I was working at both Virgin and Google, it was like, you know, I would have my 8.5, 9 hour day or more if there's a show that evening. But around that time, I'll be doing my side hustle. And yes, sometimes there was a bit of spillover, and I can say that now because I don't have a boss anymore to shout at me. But yeah, like I packed my day with just busyness, but not just trying to be busy for the sake of being busy. It was really about just like real work. You know, just because I mentioned emails, like I think it's really important that people remember that emails isn't your work. Email is a tool to help you. And sometimes, yes, your work can't be progressed unless emails are sent. Try and take time outside of emails. Just go old school. I often do this where I literally just sit with a pencil and my notebook. And that's where I'm just like being creative and thinking ahead and being proactive. And I think sometimes you look at your inbox and you feel like answering all those emails will make you productive for that day. But actually, sometimes you just have to spend half of the day doing those emails and the other half doing other things which are much more meaningful to getting campaigns over the line.
I want to encourage people to think about emails like physical letters, right? Mm. My inbox is out of control. I've got 800 unread emails in my inbox. And I want people to think every time they send an email, like in my mind, an email should be to follow up like a conversation, as opposed to start a conversation or have the conversation. Yeah. There's a telephone, there's Zoom, there's loads of other methods of communication. So like the way I visually picture my inbox is like a massive mail sack, like old school, bulging with letters. So yeah, emails are like the bane of my, the bane of my life.
Do you know what, it's crazy.
Sometimes there's a necessary evil there.
Absolutely.
That's true. But as I was saying, like, even like the conversation we had, Sylvia, previously, I've gone old school as well. I've got like a paper and a pen and I literally write down the stuff that I need to be doing. So just to echo what like Gilbert said, I think it's important to just go back to that because you don't want to overwhelm yourself with the work that you got now. But yeah, I appreciate that. You've answered both of my questions and I've got the information that I needed. So that's great, Gilbert.
No, great questions. Thank you.
Back to you, Anne.
Gilbert, thank you so much for chatting to us today. It's been an absolute pleasure. I feel like pumped up from talking to you. I want to go and answer some emails.
No, step away from the emails.
Honestly, though, you know, I feel like there's no one listening who could fail to be inspired by your story. So thank you so, so much for speaking to us today. So each episode, we'll be making a donation to a cause we care about on behalf of our guests. Gilbert, which charity have you picked this week and why?
I've chosen to donate to Nordhoff Robbins. Nordhoff Robbins is an amazing charity that I've worked with previously in my career, but they do excellent work with music therapy and helping people with disabilities or, you know, whatever it is, with music therapy sessions and things like that. So yeah, Nordhoff Robbins.
Amazing. Well, that thank you so, so much. That's an incredible cause, an incredible charity, an incredible interview and insight from yourself, Gilbert. It has genuinely been an absolute pleasure to have you on the BIY pod. Thank you so much for all your time. Thank you for everything that you do. I'm sure we'll be speaking again.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, Gilbert. We really hope you enjoyed that chat with Gilbert. So interesting to hear his story. And if that inspired you, or if you've got any questions you'd like to ask about his story or about this episode, or just any questions for us in general, do go ahead and send us an email to hello@biypeople.co.uk with BIY Pod in the subject line. Obviously, we heard Gilbert's story from the beginning to where he is now, but your question doesn't have to be about entry-level work or getting into the music industry. Perhaps you're already in it, but you're not quite where you want to be. Perhaps you want a bit of a career change, or you're just looking for some HR advice. We can answer questions for you on any of the above. So again, the email address is hello@biypeople.co.uk. Go ahead and follow us on social media as well. On Instagram, it's a long one, biy.people.and.talent. That's our Instagram page. And if you're just starting out in the music business, you can check out our Future Talent Facebook page, BIY Future Talent. If you're already in the music business and you're looking for a bit of a change of career path, on Facebook, it's just BIY Peoples. If you enjoyed the podcast, we hope you'll go ahead and subscribe so you don't miss out on future episodes. Leave us a review as well. That's the best thing you can do for us in order to get this podcast to more ears. Thank you so much to the brilliant Kiarni Kerr, our producer, and Danny Roberts, our editor, who's also brilliant. And we will catch you with another episode next week.
This podcast was brought to you by BIY People and Talent to help you believe it yourself, build it yourself, and be it yourself.